You're listening to the Dead Presidents Podcast.
And this is the Top 5 Troubled First Ladies.
5! We're about to take a dive!
4!
In the presidential mode!
3!
Who will talk like me?
2!
We're about to tell you!
1!
The show's not begun!
Welcome to the Dead Presidents Podcast. I'm James J. Hamilton.
And I'm Stephen Lincoln Douglas.
Being president is hard, but, you know, being first lady is hard, too.
Yeah. If you thought being the president was hard, wait till you try being their wife. And that's going to bring us around to the top 5 troubled first ladies.
Number 5.
Betty Ford.
Oh, Betty Ford. Betty Ford's father and brother were alcoholics. She married Gerald Ford in 1948 after divorcing her first husband, who was also an alcoholic.
Not a healthy combination.
In the early 1960s, Betty was prescribed painkillers for a pinched nerve in her neck.
Even a less healthy combination.
She suffered chronic pain and developed a dependency on painkillers. She had a nervous breakdown in 1965, she sought psychiatric help but did not address her pill addiction. She was taking up to 20 pills a day.
Wow.
This was exacerbated by alcohol consumption that she viewed as normal, that was somewhat held in check while she was first lady, but by her full schedule of public appearances.
Yeah.
She wrote in her memoir, "I liked alcohol. It made me feel warm, and I loved pills. They took away my tension and my pain." After the Fords left the White House, her drinking and pill use increased drastically. In 1978, her family gave her an intervention, and she was initially angry and resentful about it.
Yeah.
But a week later, she entered drug and alcohol rehab. She faced the truth of her addictions. It was only at this time that she realized that her father, brother, and first husband had been alcoholics. Gerald Ford quit drinking himself in order to support her, and he later admitted that he had been kind of an enabler. After 6 years of sobriety, she said, "These have been the best years of my life from the standpoint of feeling healthier and feeling more comfortable with myself." In 1982, she co-founded a treatment center with special emphasis on supporting women and reluctantly agreed to let it be named after herself. For the rest of her life, she dedicated herself to running the Betty Ford Center, actively counseling individual patients and becoming an activist for education and treatment of chemical dependency. Barbara Bush noted that Betty Ford, quote, "transformed her pain into something great for the common good. Because she suffered, there will be more healing. Because of her grief, there will be more joy."
A great redemption story with Betty Ford.
It's a troubled first lady who really turned it around and
managed
to help a lot of people.
And that's more lucky than some of the others on our list.
Indeed.
We're going to come around now to top 5 troubled first lady.
Number 4.
Nancy Reagan.
Nancy Reagan was born in New York, raised in Chicago. She moved to Hollywood and worked as an actress throughout her 20s and 30s. In 1952, she became the second wife of Screen Actors Guild president Ronald Reagan. He later became a different kind of president. And Nancy's troubles as first lady really began with Reagan's attempted assassination in 1981.
Yeah.
Recall episode 4, top 5 failed assassins, number 1, John Hinckley. Nancy was severely shaken by the event and became extremely protective and paranoid about her husband's safety. She consulted San Francisco astrologer Joan Quigley as to which days would be propitious for Reagan to travel and make public appearances. She altered the president's schedule without his knowledge based on astrological advice.
Wow.
And Quigley later released a book claiming that she was in charge of the president's schedule. The White House chief of staff, Don Regan, clashed with Nancy so much that Reagan demanded his resignation. Regan wrote, quote, "Virtually every major move and decision the Reagans made during my time as White House chief of staff was cleared in advance with a woman in San Francisco who drew up horoscopes to make certain that the planets were in a favorable alignment for the enterprise."
Holy shit.
Nancy wrote in her memoirs that no political decision was ever based on astrology, and that astrology was simply one of the ways I coped with the fear I felt after my husband almost died. I don't really believe astrology was one of the reasons further assassination attempts didn't occur, but I don't really believe it wasn't.
Wow.
Wow.
Well, that's going to become a little bit of a theme.
Well, Nancy was following a little bit of a precedent when she was doing that.
Indeed. That's going to bring us to top five troubled first ladies.
Number three.
Florence Harding. Born in Marion, Ohio, she trained to become a concert pianist. At age 19, she eloped with Pete DeWolfe and gave birth to her only child 9 months later. 2 years into the marriage, her alcoholic husband abandoned the family. He attempted to rob a train in 1885, and they were divorced the next year. Florence's wealthy father adopted her son, but refused to support Florence. In 1890, she married Warren Harding, owner of the Marion Star newspaper, against the wishes of her father, who threatened to shoot Harding and repeated a rumor that he had African-American ancestry. Florence was the informal business manager of the Marion Star and considered herself the brains behind the paper. She encouraged her husband's political career, but deplored his incessant philandering. Recall episode 2's Top 5 Presidential Adulterers, number 2, Warren Gamaliel Harding.
Indeed.
Her son died of tuberculosis in 1915. She suffered from severe kidney ailments and growing depression. In 1920, she tentatively supported Harding's presidential ambitions as a clairvoyant named Madame Marcia supposedly forecast that Harding would become president, but would die in office. Harding won the presidency, and Florence took an active role, influencing cabinet picks and at times appearing to dominate the president. She relished the role of First Lady and was active in many causes. She publicly supported prohibition, but privately served alcohol, and Harding himself drank excessively to deal with the stress of office. Fearing for her husband's safety, she invited Madame Marcia to the White House and used astrology to determine the president's schedule. Her kidney ailment returned with a vengeance, and she almost died. In 1923, Harding was diagnosed with heart trouble, and Madame Marcia predicted that he would not live to see 1925. Despite both of them being in poor health, they went on a coast-to-coast tour, and Harding became the first president to visit Alaska. He fell seriously ill on the tour, and on August 2, 1923, died suddenly in San Francisco's Palace Hotel. Florence refused to allow an autopsy and had his body embalmed 1 hour after his death. Doctors said the cause of death was a burst blood vessel in the brain. Then they said it was a stroke. There was speculation that he suffered from food poisoning, had pneumonia, had a heart attack, or overdosed on mysterious purgatives prescribed by his doctor. A little over a year later, Florence finally succumbed to her kidney disease. In 1930, a book was published arguing that Florence had poisoned her adulterous husband. The book has been described as conspiratorial and the claim described as debunked. But on the 95th anniversary of Harding's death, a descendant of the Palace Hotel's owner went public with a family story. Allegedly, Florence was screaming that the hotel's food had killed her husband and that she was going to sue. The hotel owners denied this and confirmed that no one else had suffered foodborne illness, but Florence wouldn't back down. One of the owners noticed a half-full glass near the president's bed that had a noxious odor and said they intended to have its contents analyzed. Florence allegedly snatched the glass away, poured its contents down the drain, and said there would be no lawsuit.
Sounds a little suspicious.
There is a lot of suspicion here. There are stories of Florence talking to Warren's corpse, stroking his hair and assuring him, "Everything's fine now, Warren. They can't hurt you now, Warren. Everything's okay now. They can't hurt you anymore."
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it seemed like Florence Harding really loved being First Lady and loved all the power she got from it. And it's not like she just found out that Harding had been cheating on her incessantly for years. She already knew all that stuff, but
did she let Madame Marcia influence her to a point that drove her to murder?
Yeah, maybe she believed so much in Madame Marcia that she kind of made the prediction come true. You know, so I read something about how, you know, there were lots of scandals and corruption things that plagued Harding, and that there was, you know, that maybe Florence knew that a bunch more scandal stuff was about to be made public and wanted to, I don't know, save him from it, or...
No, it was picture like a scene where, like, he starts to, like, feel the effects of poison, and she's just like, shh, it's okay, it's okay. It's okay. It's okay. Breathe. Breathe. Sadistic.
Yeah, they were both pretty messed up. Seemed like it was probably a pretty dysfunctional relationship in a lot of ways.
Pretty tough. And speaking of tough, that's going to bring us down to top five troubled first lady.
Number two.
Jane Pierce. Jane married Franklin Pierce in 1834. She was intensely shy, devoutly religious, and pro-temperance. She was gaunt and chronically ill with tuberculosis and psychological problems. Though her new husband was a member of the U.S. House of Representatives from New Hampshire, she abhorred politics and despised Washington, D.C. She hated being a political wife and blamed politics for all of her troubles, including her husband's excessive alcohol consumption. Recall episode 1, top 5 drunkest president, number 1, Franklin Pierce. He once resigned from the Senate at her urging and turned down appointment as attorney general due to her objection. The Pierces had 3 sons, which became her greatest source of pain. Their first son, Franklin Jr., died 3 days after he was born. Their second son, Frank Robert, died at the age of 4. Their third son, Benjamin Pierce, was a bright boy with great potential who became the sole light of Jane's life. When her husband received the Democratic presidential nomination in 1852, she fainted at the news. Pierce persuaded her to accept it only by arguing that if he became president, it would greatly enhance Benny's prospects of success in life. Pierce won the election, and on January 6th, 1853, the Pierces were on their way to Washington, D.C. for the inauguration when their train car derailed and rolled down an embankment. Pierce and Jane survived, as did everyone else on board. But Benny was crushed to death and nearly decapitated right before their very eyes. Pierce tried to throw his cloak over him to keep Jane from seeing. But it was too late. He was unable to hide the gruesome sight from his wife, and they both suffered severe depression afterward. Jane wondered whether the accident was divine punishment for her husband's pursuit of high office. She did not attend the inauguration and spent most of her time as First Lady secluded in the upstairs living quarters. She wrote long letters to her dead son, apologizing for her failings as a mother. She didn't make her first public appearance as First Lady until 2 years into her husband's term. She died of tuberculosis in 1863. One of the saddest stories of First Ladies.
Indeed.
But I do want to mention that despite this, Jane Pierce was instrumental in introducing the very first White House Christmas tree.
Nice.
That was one of the only acts that she did, and I think she probably did it thinking Benny would have loved this.
Yeah.
And that's going to bring us down to the top five troubled First Lady.
Number one,
Mary Todd Lincoln.
Mary was born to a wealthy Kentucky family. She moved to Illinois as a teenager, where she was courted by Stephen Douglas before marrying his rival, Abraham Lincoln.
We can't go too much into that, James.
Maybe another time. She and Lincoln had four sons, three of whom died young. Eddie died in 1850 at age 4, Willie in 1862 at age 12, and Tad in 1871 at age 18. Mary suffered from protracted depression throughout her adult life. She also had migraines that became more frequent after she suffered a carriage accident head injury while First Lady. When Willie died during Lincoln's presidency, she was bedridden for weeks, couldn't attend the funeral, couldn't take care of her youngest son, Tad.
Yeah, she was a complete basket case, and I think it hurt Tad a hell of a lot because he was looking for some kind of answer, and his mother was not there for him.
Yeah, and I mean, his father pretty busy. Frickin' Civil War in full swing. For months afterwards, Lincoln had to employ a nurse to look after Mary. And if that wasn't enough tragedy for her, she was holding her husband's hand when John Wilkes Booth shot him in the head at Ford's Theater. Lincoln was in a coma overnight, and Mary was so distraught that War Secretary Edwin Stanton had to order her out of the room. After Lincoln's death, she only wore black for the rest of her life. Tad's death in 1871 brought on an overpowering grief and depression.
So, yeah, that was the point of no return.
Yeah, that's really that the final straw.
I mean, if she was in dire straits before, that was it. Mm-hmm. She was never going to be able to function normally again.
Yeah, some historians and psychologists believe she may have suffered from bipolar disorder. At this point, her remaining son, Robert, became alarmed at her increasingly erratic behavior. On a visit to Florida, she was seized by an irrational fear that Robert was deathly ill, only to find him in perfect health on her return. She told him that someone had tried to poison her on the train and that a, quote, wandering Jew had taken her pocketbook but returned it later. She would spend large amounts of money on things she never used. She walked around with $56,000 in government bonds sewn into her clothes.
Jesus Christ.
And despite all this, she had an irrational fear of poverty. She was receiving a pension from the government.
Yeah.
And was afraid of poverty. In 1872, a quack spiritualist photographer convinced her that a double exposure photograph depicted Lincoln's ghost standing behind her.
That's right. And listeners, James and I have seen this photo at the Mary Todd Lincoln home in Lexington, Kentucky.
Yeah, go to our Twitter and Instagram at Dead Prez Podcast. We'll put the photo up on there too. It's double exposure, but it looks pretty creepy.
It's one of those, you know, I don't know. You see a lot of these type of photos, and it's like, you know, as we yeah. grow into the modern day, it's easier to say like, that's fake.
Yeah.
But I mean, even if you go back to, like, say, the 90s and you saw some of those pictures as a child, it's like, whoa.
Yeah, and if you're a troubled first lady.
Even more so if you're like a deeply mentally imbalanced.
Really desperate to believe that, you know, Abe is out there looking over you.
Desperately seeking answers and closure. And this quack comes along and is like, look. And she's like, oh my God.
Yeah, 1875, Robert Lincoln began proceedings to have his mother institutionalized. A jury committed her to an insane asylum. When she, you know, heard about this ruling, she tried to obtain enough laudanum to commit suicide, but an alert pharmacist gave her a placebo. Instead, she ended up getting out of the asylum by sending letters to a newspaper and to a friend. It caused Robert and the asylum director to fear embarrassing publicity about, like, I guess, being accused of mistreating and holding her against her will.
Yeah.
They didn't want to get dragged into something like that. So she was declared well enough to go live with her sister and manage her own affairs.
Yeah, because it could have caused a problem. Think about the timing.
Mm-hmm.
You know? The newspapers would love to find something else to talk about at this time, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm. But this caused her to become estranged from Robert, and she didn't see him again until shortly before her death. She spent 4 years traveling in Europe, living in France. She suffered severe cataracts and in 1879 suffered spinal injuries falling from a stepladder. She spent her last years confined to her sister's home. On the 12th anniversary of Tad's death, she collapsed into a coma and died of a stroke the next morning. It's another sad story.
Yeah. Deeply tragic.
You know, all these, pretty much, all these troubled first ladies have lots of tragedies and unfortunate events in their lives.
Indeed. Betty Ford, happily able to bounce back. Nancy Reagan,
she made it through all right.
She made it through.
The top three, not so much.
Yeah, unfortunately, not so much.
To our female listeners, would you describe your mental imbalances as more of a 4 or 5?
Or do you find yourself irredeemably in a top three spot?
Hit us up on Twitter at Dead Prez Podcast and let us know your troubles.
Until next time, this has been the Dead Presidents Podcast.